We all want to be the best teachers possible. And sometimes that means fretting over what our learners are actually learning and where they are struggling. There are a few things that we can really look at, a little deep dive. And in today's podcast episode, we are going to be sharing a few of those things so that way you know exactly what to be looking for. This is a repost from a few years ago. So if you've even listened to it before, I want you to continue to take in this information because you are currently at a different place right now and you'll pick up more things in a different light than you even did before. Welcome to A Step Forward, a podcast for ambitious VI specialists who are challenging the status quo. I'm Cassie Maloney, your new work bestie. With over 15 years of experience as an O&M specialist, author, professional development junkie, mom, and owner of Allied Independence, I have been through the ringer. And now I'm here to bring you a boost of inspiration, information, and our favorite, innovation, as we trade feeling overwhelmed for overjoyed while we create a significant impact in the lives of our learners and still lead more balanced, fulfilling lives. So grab your favorite beverage because we're about to take a step forward.
You know what I think is so crazy about this whole teaching situation, especially as support staff? Our learners are only with us 1% of their waking lives. If you teach them Braille, maybe 2% of their waking lives. And yet we are expected to be the experts in their independence. How does that compute? How can we even do that when they are with other people or themselves the other 99% of the time? If your learner isn't making the progress that they deserve to make, let's dive into the possible reasons why. And if they are, if you're like, no, I actually don't need this. All of my learners are amazing. Let's give you some tips to elevate you anyway, because you're already rocking it in that area. Why not use a little boost? You're already here. And this way, you can continue to increase their independence without burning out. Have you ever seen a burnt out impactful teacher? Probably not. It would be like asking someone to build a new home with burnt trees. When you are burnt out and trying to teach, you are using way too many resources and way too much energy just to show up, let alone make a significant impact. Now, the point here is to keep you out of overwhelm, keep you away from getting burnt out as much as possible. Because often when we are overwhelmed, when we feel burnt out, it's because we keep trying to push Beryl up the hill. Like we're saying, oh, this one skill, I have to try to force it to work just so that I can look good. Think about that. How much are our egos really involved in our decision-making processes? And if you kind of want to scream at me right now and you wish this was a two-way conversation, you're welcome to DM me and scream at me at Allied Independence, Instagram, and Facebook. But take a moment to actually think about that. When we are trying to force a skill, it's typically because our egos are somewhere involved. Either we are afraid that we aren't a good enough teacher at all, or we don't want other people to think that we aren't a good enough teacher, or we just don't want to write that the student didn't get the progress that they deserved to make on the IEP during progress reporting time. I've been there, and I'm sure so many other people have. Or maybe wherever you and the student or the learner were during their IEP time or when you were creating the assessment and developing their goals is just not where one or both of you guys are 10 months later. And some years were just rainier than others, and we couldn't go outside as much. And I had written all outside goals and forgot that I moved to a new city and there's a rainy season because I came from a rainy climate where life didn't stop because of the rain and everybody carries umbrellas and jackets. And I don't think I ever had rain boots living in South Florida. I don't think I ever bought those till Austin because magically when it doesn't rain that much, it matters more. And that's okay. But we have to first look at why we are trying to push a square peg into a round hole. And we have to take a second and just pause and look around. Maybe there's an easier way to get these skills met. That because we've been behind the barrel pushing it uphill for so long, we haven't been able to see the other ways. And perhaps I can give you some ideas today that will help you lean into what's going on and give you ideas to help get you going downstream. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, let's make things a little easier for you. If your learner isn't making the progress that they need, look at three areas. Take the time to look at all three objectively, knowing that this is not a reflection of who you are as a person, and a good, gentle, loving reminder that whatever is happening in the present moment is the best thing for the learner and for you. So it's okay. I don't want to put that much pressure on you to have to do it perfectly, because that's probably what has got you pushing that barrel up the hill in the first place. Now, I want you to actually take a step outside of the office. Walk away from your desk. Go on a walk, or maybe think about this stuff while you're driving in between students or some other time, and let the ideas come to you instead of you forcing them. Here are the things to take into consideration. The first one being is that their skills just are not fully developed. Motor skills specifically are multi-causal. And what we are doing is we are combining motor skills plus orientation and mental mapping skills. We know that they are not going to come about until each component is fully developed. Now, if that's the case, continuing to try to get these skills to emerge by just teaching to the skill is not going to work. I want you to go below the skill, which means you might have to start at a deeper level than even any of the checklists that you're using are going to allow for. I want you to look at where we all start, sensory integration. This is something that I harp on a lot, if you know me, because I have found this to be the number one key to increasing my student skills. And I found it entirely fascinating when I was able to take a 13-year-old and test them for an ATNR reflex and see firsthand, oh, they can't move their cane because they still have an ATNR reflex. That's supposed to go away when they're a baby. So is it me? Is it my teaching? Or do I need to start looking at other areas? Do I need to keep nagging them about moving their cane left and right? Or do I need to get them on their hands and knees a little bit more often? Even though getting them on their hands and knees does not, on the outside, look like I'm working towards our goals. But I know that I can see that their sensory integration needs more time to develop. One big, huge component of our work that often gets overlooked is proprioceptive awareness. Let's break it down super quick. Your shoulder has the greatest range of motion than any other joint. So if your shoulder is not telling your brain where it is in space, or the angle of your arm coming from your shoulder, and then you trace that down to your cane, what happens? You, as an O&M specialist, can stand at an intersection and see the trajectory of where a learner is going to go. Let's take that skill and use it in a little bit more micro level, simply just looking at their shoulder. Do they even understand where their shoulder is? Do they have a good feeling about where their arm is on their body? We often think we have to have lots of different ideas after we leave a conference, but really, we only need like one or two. And that one thing is something that I took away from a conference, and I will never not be able to talk about it. If I could figure out how to teach you the skills that I learned, I would, but they were not my skills. They were not my studies or my skills to teach you. So I have a hard time doing that. The point being, look way below the surface. Look at their sensory integration. Look at their body awareness. Look at their concept development. Look at their ability to do one-step commands. How is that all fitting into where they are right now in relation to their goals? Second thing is that they aren't generalizing their skills. We can't do it all what we're expected to, but we can. So within that, we've got two areas that we need to look at. One, how can we get the learner to be intrinsically motivated to learn these skills? Ultimately, it's their life. If they don't see value in what you're doing, you'll be hard-pressed to get them to practice any skills when they are not with you. I was driving in the car with my student who I've now had for 4 years. I'm very excited about this because I'm not used to having a student for this long. We have a great relationship. It's so hilarious. And I have loved watching this person grow. Again, I will remind you, I'm not used to having students for this long. And it's amazing. We were talking about how when he was in middle school and we first met, even though he came with a lot of skills, he didn't see the value in O&M. He didn't really understand what it was. He didn't really see why we needed to be doing this stuff. But now that he's almost ready to graduate high school, which, it's too much for me. It's too much. He's starting to see the impact of the work that I made him do for all these years. Because that kid did not want to work. It was like, why am I doing this? I do this at home. Or like, I don't go grocery shopping. I'm 13. Yes, but you will by the time you're 16 or 17. I'm going to be moving on to other things. And so are you. And we have. But at first, I would say the first year, maybe the first 2 years, he was like, who is this woman? Why do I have to do this? And he would barely walk. Barely move, didn't want to do it. And guess what? He didn't make that much progress. But now, because he's intrinsically motivated by the fear of independence, he's like, okay, what's going on? I want to learn all the skills because I'm going to be hungry and on my own. Yes, finally. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming to see my side. And that's just kind of the way it is. This isn't our lives. This is their lives. We have our independence. We got our jobs. But if they can't see the value in what you're doing, they're just not going to do it. The other thing about generalized skills, that all goes back to them practicing when you're not around the other 98 to 99% of the time, is how do we get our team members on board to help us? Oftentimes we talk at our other team members. We tell them what to do. And when somebody talks at you, especially if they come at you in a condescending tone, does that feel good? It doesn't. But a lot of times we aren't taught other ways to interact with these people. And maybe we're a little frustrated, or maybe we're very frustrated because we see the value in what we're doing, but they may not. They may have other things that they need to be working on, and they have other stressors. And because we're not around, they don't see the value and we don't build the relationships with them. When we tell them what they should be doing instead of listening, it breaks down our relationship with them. If you're watching Brené Brown and how she is handling her position with Spotify and other Spotify exclusive podcasters, it is fascinating to watch this woman walk her talk. If you listen to any of her podcasts or read any of her books, which I highly recommend any and all of them, it doesn't matter. Just go to the bookstore. If it says Brené Brown, just read it. She talks a lot about leaning into vulnerability. Oh, she also has a great TED Talk and Netflix. Free, amazing, consume all of her stuff. It'll make you a better person. And here's my question to you. If you have read her books, you'll understand this a little bit more. How can we have an open front while still maintaining a strong with the team, our team members? How can we come together for a shared purpose and check our egos at the door? Here's some tips on exactly how I like to do it. And maybe not exactly, because everybody's different and every situation is different. But one way I like to do this is by asking before I talk. If a teacher is doing something wrong, I do not humiliate them in front of their students by pointing it out right away. Albeit, I have seen this be effective in the moment. It's kind of like when you start driving slow because you see a cop car and then the cop car doesn't come after you and you speed up again. It's kind of like that, how I see this. What we want to make is a lasting impression and build our relationship up, not tear it down. Because the relationships are the foundation of getting anything and everything that you want in this life. So I like to talk to them afterwards. And since it's a relationship, I like to take the advice that I got from my therapist about relationship and see if you can set a time to talk to them within 24 hours, preferably. Like, you might just give them a call, text them, send them a quick email as soon as you get to wherever you're going after you saw the incident and say, hey, can we set up a time to talk later? Say it in a nice way because nobody likes that like nervousness. You'll figure that part out. That way you don't feel like you have to say it right then and there or you'll forget. Set a time with them. It could be 10, 15 minutes. It could be a quick phone call. I don't suggest crucial conversations over text. But then that break allows you to process your own feelings, but it's not so far away that both of you forgot what happened or sweep it under the rug. Because if they do it once and they don't notice, they'll probably do it again because they can't read your mind. And they didn't get a master's in O&M or VI. They got a degree in whatever they got a degree in. They don't know everything that you know, and they can't be expected to. But doing it this way and giving yourself a little bit of space allows you to still hold them accountable without making you the bad guy automatically. Still might be the bad guy a little bit. But if you are, that's their ego, not yours. Now, let me reframe. If they make you out to be the bad guy anyway, after you've set aside time to chat with them and you've asked them their perspective, and then you've shared yours in a nice, kind, radically communicative way, then that might be all. You can't take on their how they feel about you. And I don't want you not advocating for people just because you're scared of what they'll think of you. All you can do is own your part. And if they get upset, that might be their ego trying to keep them safe. Because nobody wants to know that they're sucking at something important. And ultimately, we all care about these students, learners, clients, whatever you want to call them. We're not here doing our job for the money. We care. And so if they feel hurt, then I just want you to remember that as long as you've said things in a really nice, kind, and accountable way, they might just have to process their own feelings. And that might just have to be okay. I say this because I love you. Also, because it's something that I've had to grow into. Definitely not skills I had in my 20s. The third reason, and this one is often overlooked when we are in our day to day, is that our lesson plans just aren't hitting the mark. It's not because you're a bad teacher. It's simply because you don't have the right daily plan of action in place to get your learners to where they need to go. We often get trapped in a cycle of writing goals that don't line up with their actual needs and creating a delivery time schedule that is off. And then we wonder why we are struggling to create the impact that we know that they deserve to have. Now, this is the one where people who are happy with their status quo will often balk at, because it takes extra time and care to really look at not just what the checklists say, but where that learner is actually going and how you can get them there in the fastest, most effective, most efficient way. What we want to do is create goals that are like a domino effect and actually make an impact and help get them to the life that they want to lead, not just what predetermined checklists say. Now, it's totally normal and it happens all the time. And if you are in your first 5 years and you are just like, okay, they got this skill, good, I'm going to go down the next row. Okay, that's an okay place to be. There's no shame in that. But the next step is really looking at your learners' lives as a whole and figuring out what is going to make them intrinsically motivated. What are their actual goals for their life? And then following the processes that we have inside Impacting Independence that will help elevate the things that you're already doing to make you a better teacher and help get you home at an earlier time. In Impacting Independence, we go over exactly how to create the right goals for your learners based not only on the checklist, but what they actually need. And then in Clarity, our lesson plan membership, we give you done-for-you lesson plans that you can customize in 5 minutes or less. So you can continue to teach impactful lessons even on the days that you don't have to plan. Okay, let's review. Real quick, if your learner isn't making the progress that they deserve to be making, or if you want to elevate your teaching, let's look at these three areas. And I want you to look at them away from your ego, because there's no shame in any of this. Everything that we are talking about today is completely normal. You are exactly where you're supposed to be on your journey. And there's always room for improvement. There's space for you to become a better teacher. Number one, the skills that you're looking for just aren't fully developed. If that's the case, look underneath those skills and go all the way to the bottom to sensory integration and start there. Number two, they aren't generalizing their skills. Either they aren't intrinsically motivated, or you need better relationships with their team. Number three, the lesson plans you're presenting just aren't creating a domino effect to bring them to their life goals. And if that's the case, if possible, go back to the drawing board altogether and look at what you're missing. All right, friend, send me a DM. Let me know what you thought. What is something else that I might be missing? And which one of these things are you going to do as you take the next step forward into becoming the next best teacher that you possibly can be? I'm on Instagram at Allied Independence, as well as Facebook. And if you want to take a screenshot of this and share it with your friends, let them know that you are listening. I would so greatly appreciate it. And if you want me to share it, tag me and I'd be happy to share it. I appreciate you so much. And I can't wait to talk to you again next week. Bye for now.
As orientation and mobility specialists, we know that one of the most difficult things to do is to teach night lessons. It's just an area where we may not be the most proficient, specifically because we don't often teach it because we are not often working during that time, which is why it is so important to be able to have those skills and transfer them onto your learners in a safe, efficient, and impactful way. Because you're part of this community, we want to offer you the opportunity to skip all of the messiness of the learning part of it, learn from our mistakes, and set yourself up for success with a free workshop as well as a full lesson plan on how to teach night travel to your learners. It doesn't matter what type of learner, it doesn't matter what their visual impairment is. This lesson plan will be able to be customizable within like 5 minutes, and it comes with all of the materials that you need and links to all of the resources for you to get any tools that you might want to bring with you. All you have to do is go to alliedindependenceonline.com/travel. That's alliedindependenceonline.com/travel to go grab your free workshop and done for you lesson plan on night travel.